It's time now for All You Ever Wanted to Know, a chance for you to get to know what's going on in and around your community and the fabulous people that make it happen. With On the Land, here's Jack Dawes.
Okay. Well, once again, good morning. A crisp Thursday morning, and what else would you want at this time of year? On the program today, we're going to take a look at these new food guides that are out this week and the Planetary Guide to Better Eating, etc. That's a little later. Also on the program today, we'll take a look at the world wheat markets. But before we do that, we're going to dip back into this question of how do we fund crop development, new varieties, and so forth in the province, well, in Canada. We reported last week from Crop Week, and this week we have Ag Days underway. I'm in the studio in Yorkton. Harry Siemens, our colleague from Manitoba, is at Ag Days, and Jim Dick, an independent oat breeder who is based in Saskatoon, is also going to be on the line with us to discuss that question. Now, there was a major session last week at Crop Week, which we discussed here last Thursday here on All You Ever Wanted to Know. And I've been sort of puzzled by it, and we still have hopes that we may be able to get one of the Wheat Commission people on the program with us here today to discuss it from their point of view. But Jim Dick is a company called Oat Advantage. He and his family in Saskatoon. He's an independent oat breeder. Jim has, I know he has one registered oat variety that's on the market now and maybe more to come. So, gentlemen, I'm going to start this with you, Jim. And Harry Siemens, as I mentioned, is on the line. I'm going to get Harry to chirp in. Before we sort of get into this breeding thing, Jim, I'd like to get your quick observations. You were at Ag Days yesterday. Just maybe a couple of things that popped out at you besides the weather or displays or people you bumped into. What's top of mind from Ag Days for you, Jim Dick?
We're just wandering around. The people are making plans for spring seeding, and it's good to talk to people about the seed varieties that are out there. And we're excited. I'm excited to talk to growers about opportunities in oats. That was good for me, and so that was what I was looking for.
So, as far as acreage or planting intentions, do you think Manitoba farmers have their minds made up about what's going into the rotations this year, Jim, from what you've heard so far?
As I heard that the price of oats is looking good for the spring, so that would motivate growers to plant a little bit more, and so that's nice. We are in, for our company, Oat Advantage, we have two varieties of Seacan that are going to be released this spring or are being, and there's so if the prices are good, and there might be hopefully a lot of uptake of our first two new varieties.
Okay, great. By the way, our guest Jim Dick and our regular contributor Harry Siemens, both are kids from southern Manitoba. Harry's also wandering the hallways of Manitoba Ag Days. Maybe you guys will bump into each other. Harry, what's your top of mind from Ag Days so far?
Well, you know, it's in the 42nd year, and the biggest thing is that I remember the first one, so you know how long I've been in the business. And secondly, you know, a lot of farmers on the first day, yesterday, pretty good. Today it's a bit thinner because weather and so forth. And, you know, and it's a big show. You know, 550 exhibits, 800 companies involved, and 60 speakers. And it's just a huge thing, and I haven't so much been talking to various people as we did yesterday. You know, I was in the inventions barn 4, and you know, there's so much technology that's floating around here. And I talked to a young fella who helps with the camera work on our TV show, and I said, you know what, each piece of equipment that you see here. And it's just the same as for Jim Dick. You know, each variety that's out there. Number one, it starts with an idea. Number two, it's got to be designed. Number three, it's got to be made. And number four, it has to be sold if it's going to be worth anything to somebody. So it's just absolutely awesome to be able to be part of an agricultural industry like this, probably second to none in anywhere in the world. And I really appreciate, you know, one of the things, moisture is really lacking in Manitoba. And I just talked to a seed grower from Wawanisa. He says, Harry, you know, we grew 50, 60, 65 bushels an acre wheat last year on 4 to 5 inches of rain. And he says, we're going to need more rain because it's very dry. But that's a testament, he said, as a seed grower and, you know, to genetics and to varieties and so forth. And you know what? Things have changed. To grow a crop on 4 to 5 inches of rain, but this year we're going to have that same amount and more because it's really dry.
All right, so getting back to the seed royalties and the development of new varieties issue, as I mentioned off the top, we had hoped to have Tom Steve with the Alberta Wheat Commission giving us the commission's point of view. Harry, you and I had a discussion about this, and Jim, I think you and I did too. I was somewhat surprised and maybe even taken aback during Crop Week in Saskatoon last week, the federal government-sponsored session on royalties. A number of the commissions, including the Saskatchewan Wheat Commission, had put out statements beforehand saying they opposed either of two royalty concepts that the federal government is proposing. But the session, I thought, was pretty mamby-pamby. A lot of producers did get up and speak and express their concerns, but the commission seemed to back right off. And that, yeah, as I say, that was a surprise to me. That is, as I say, that is where we were hoping Tom Steve might step in, and I'm just going into that because we're hoping Tom may get back to us. He was on a plane from Quebec City and may not be on the ground yet. So, Jim Dick, I'd just like to talk to you for a few minutes now. You're an independent oat breeder, and I know a bit about your background, your bio. I know that you grew up in Winnipeg. You went on to be, you worked with UGG, I think, when I first met you. Then you went on, as the companies changed, you became part of UGG, become part of AgriCorps United, and then eventually Viterra, I believe, and then on to you and Laura Lee and your own Oat Advantage business. Have I got that sequence somewhat correct, Jim?
Yeah, you pretty much covered it. And then so after we AgriCorps United in 2008, we started our own operation from scratch in Saskatoon, and with the goal of working on oats in the industry that it is, and to try to work on developing, you know, good varieties that will benefit both the grower and the miller, and of course the end user, which is the customer, the consumer eating oatmeal and things like this, that they get a good product. And it's been a nice 10 years. You know, when you talk about commissions or things like, you know, the Prairie Oak Growers Association and others, CCAN and Richardson, they've been supporters of our research, and it really has been a great sort of a moral boost or whatever you call it, you know, to you know, when you set out to do something and people are willing to put some money into the work you do, it is exciting to see that they believe in what you're doing too. And then over the past 10 years, we've kind of worked on different traits in oats and to make some changes and bring some innovation. And like you say, with machinery, it's all there. It's at the Manitoba Ag Days, you're saying, and Harry, there's amazing things. And so we hope to do amazing things in oats and definitely the dollars that have been supported through, you know, groups like the Prairie Oak Growers and the industry has been key to what we're doing.
Well, Jim, you and I spoke briefly last week during Crop Week in Saskatoon, and of course there were millions of dollars being awarded to various research projects and so forth. What's it like being an independent plant breeder in this milieu and getting funding to run your business and do your projects?
Yeah, it's a little tricky, Jack. You know, when we start out, I mean, we did have a lot of contacts and a lot of people in the crop development kind of world. And so, you know, you have a bit of a leg up going into it. And so that's great. You know, as an unknown commodity in some senses compared to a university or Ag Canada, it's a little bit harder to convince people to invest in you just because you are unknown, and maybe they're taking a chance with, you know, public dollars, for instance, if it's coming from the ADF fund in Saskatchewan or from, you know, Old Grower Checkoff funding and stuff like this. But, you know, that it's a little harder sometimes to you know, and that's understandable because the University of Saskatchewan, for instance, with oat development and Agriculture Canada in Brandon, you know, these groups do such a good work, you know, that money that goes into their programs is going to turn out to really great, great things. And so the part for us is that we just, we pressed on and with, you know, different means of making things work, we've been breeding for the 10 years and trying to kind of operate on different traits from, let's say, the Ag Canada's and the universities, just to try to, you know, bring something new and something that's innovative to the oat business that they maybe they're not working on. So it is tricky to do that because you have to sort of start from scratch and then start with a zero kind of a funding base and then hopefully convince people that what you have going is going to be successful. And we started out our whole enterprise with the hopes that, you know, certified seed purchase and the royalties that come from that would be enough to, you know, get us profitable. So we're working on it.
Great, and I'll just let our listeners know, again, if you're just tuning in, I'm speaking with Jim Dick of Oat Advantage, based in Saskatoon, but this week he's in Brandon at Manitoba Ag Days. Harry Siemens also on the line with us. Jim, an independent plant breeder, especially in the oat area. So, Jim, you and I had a chance to chat a bit about the federal government's two proposals, one for what's called an endpoint royalty and the other a trailing royalty. Do you think if either of these proposals, in fact, becomes the way we do things down the road, is that going to be better for an independent breeder like yourself?
Well, I think that, you know, this is a topic, too, that is revenue for me. Again, when I started out, I thought certified seed purchase would be our form of revenue, but when this began to be talked about a year ago in terms of when I was starting to pay attention, it sounded interesting. There are certain aspects about either model that have some promise for giving us more funding that we could turn back into opportunity and effort to do innovation. We, you know, in some ways we like the trailing kind of royalty just because it works together with seed grower industry and it helps to maintain that kind of a system. It's always fantastic to work with seed growers over the past few years with seed development. And you know, we're just beginning to learn about what it would mean. We feel that the royalties that would come through that kind of system would not be too onerous for growers. If we're talking, it's hard to know what it would be, whether it's 50 cents or a dollar or an acre or something like this for saved seed or something that would be perhaps a way of coming back to the breeder. But of course, it would all be, you know, dependent on whether we can provide something of value. And that's what we're trying to do. And so we'll continue to move forward with whatever decisions are made. We hope that, again, that the base that we were hoping to depend on was certified seed purchase. So that's what we were working with. But we're looking at this topic and trying to understand the ins and outs of it ourselves.
So, Jim, you, of course, would be well aware with farmers' concerns that I haven't heard one of them say they would like to pay royalties on farm-saved seed. And that, of course, continues to be a huge issue for them.
Yeah. I think that, I mean, the process is coming a little quickly. I mean, in some ways, although I think that it really has been considered for a long time, the idea of how to kind of fund innovation. And so the discussion is continuing. And so, you know, I think there's a certain amount of wonder about what would the money do. But I think that, you know, even from our perspective, we would really, you know, plan on turning any extra dollars back into the effort to create innovation. And we feel that in oats particular, and for us, that there is a lot of room to create innovation that growers would be really happy with.
Right. Now, Harry Siemens, our radio colleague from Southern Manitoba, also at Ag Days on the line. Harry, I know you are probably chomping at the bit to ask some questions of Jim here. Go ahead.
Well, you know, you've actually covered a good chunk of that, but I do have a question, Jim. You know, for 10 years you've been in the business, and do you expect to reap, you know, some benefits, some rewards from the marketplace when you're coming up with the kind of varieties that you're looking to come up with?
Absolutely, Harry. Like, you know, just over the past 10 years, you know, you set out on these kinds of things, and really because it is a very kind of a risky proposition in some ways to do the breeding. You never know what you're going to come up with. You end up having to do a lot of begging and borrowing to get your way this far. And so we definitely hope that, you know, this year, particularly with the launch of two new varieties and then more coming down, we have a lot waiting in the wings to really get at it, especially as this moves forward. But, you know, we are hoping that it's a successful year, and these royalties will, or not the royalties of the certified seed, will help to pave the way for us to continue.
Jim, I mentioned that you have one registered oat variety. Correct me on that if necessary, and tell me tell me a bit about that variety, how it's being marketed, and what are some of the new entries that you have in the field.
Oh, yeah, so we actually have three registered varieties.
All right, there you
go.
One
of them is sort of, yeah, it's okay. One of them sitting on the shelf sort of waiting. It's kind of a specialty product, and we're just sort of in a slower market development with that. And that one is untendered. It just belongs to us. It doesn't belong to anyone else right now. And the two other ones that are with Pecan, they are varieties that with their names, kind of a nickname is 41M, with M for milling, and 42M, their sister line. But they have unique properties about them that keeps them separate. They're both nicely adapted to Manitoba and to the oak-growing regions of Western Canada. They provide a very consistent plump and good milling product, as far as we understand, over the years. And they yield well too. They stand nicely. They short straw. In the fields we've visited in the past few years on farms and this spring, we hope to visit more. Do a bit of a crop tour with those who are willing to let us come by for a visit. We're looking forward to seeing them in the field.
Great, Jim. Again,
you said for new things too, Jack. Sorry.
Yeah, go
new
ahead.
Things, we're just wait and see, but we have lots of traits that will help to add value to oats. Whether it's again even making the oats a little less itchy. We're working on a very low itch kind of a dusty oat, like a low dust oat, higher. Test weight, higher clumps, or small, heavier oats that will take up less bin space, easier to haul places, get more on the truck and things like this. And so anyway, there's lots of great traits that are waiting in the wings.
Well, Jim, on that note, I have a question for you that you think you probably know I'm going to ask you. And that is about, I know you've been... I'm going to use the word toying with, it's not that, but the idea of a winter oat that has intrigued me. And again, I'll just let our listeners know, Jim Dick is an independent oat breeder based in Saskatoon. His company is Oat Advantage. Jim, do you think there's any, have you been able to make any headway, or do you see with our climate a winter oat is possible?
That's a real challenge, Jack. And winter wheat is if you put them on the scale, winter wheat is tolerant to cold, barley, winter barley less so, and oats would be less so. But I think that there is continued these efforts with other organizations on this in the United States. They work on winter oats. I feel that with climate change that is already bringing longer days and maybe milder winters, that there is room to put efforts, even for the next couple of decades, into working on winter oats. And so we are still working on it. We will probably work a little harder starting this fall. We will work on agronomy, which is a big part of the equation with winter products. And I think there's a an opportunity there, especially as our world changes climate.
Jim, there has been work done on the oat genome, just as recently the wheat genome was mapped, and they're working on others. Has that kind of work helped you and what you do at Oat Advantage?
It'll help me because the people who I collaborate with, if they're making improvements in their oats and we share material and we can cross-pollinate between programs, this can help me directly. Our program is much more of a traditional plant breeding program where we're hands-on. We don't have, the sort of the high-valued laboratory component or molecular biology kind of methodology and tech and tools in place. So we have to operate from a more traditional kind of plant breeding, but we partner with those who do. And for their successes, if we can bring other things to the table and trade value between us, then it will help us, but we just won't do the work ourselves.
Jim, we really appreciate you taking the time to join us today and your great insights. We'll have to continue this. Now, feel free, if you feel like staying on the line with us through to the top of the next hour at noon. If you have to break away, that's fine, too. And Harry Seams is going to stay with us. He's got some audio for us about on protein in soybeans, I believe. So Jim, again, thank you. Are you going to hang in with us? If you are, I'll probably refer back to you. If not, we'll just thank you and let you break away and talk again another day.
I've got an appointment at noon, and I won't be able to make
Okay, I understand. Yeah. Well, you enjoy the rest of Ag Days, Jim. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll be talking to you again soon.
Well, good speaking with you, Jack.
Right.
You too, Harry.
Okay, Jim Dick is an independent oat breeder, his company Oat Advantage in Saskatoon. He was speaking to us, I believe, from the front seat of his car, hopefully with a good heater, from Manitoba Ag Days. We're going to take a break and be back with more On the Land from The Rock.
This is the music they play every night in London, the Symphony of War.
A tornado is approaching. Seek shelter immediately. We are in a state of emergency during this blackout. Please remain calm.
Radio, world wars, natural disasters, even through power outages. Radio has been there for every crucial emergency. Radio works to inform you of what you need to know when you need it.
To make The Rock work for you, call Rock Sales at 306-786-7625.
You're listening to All You Ever Wanted to Know. If you have a question for today's guest, call 783-5160 or 1-855-449-5160.
On the Land today is we have Harry Seamans on the line with us from Manitoba Ag Days, and our friend Jim Dick had to break away. Well, we're not big followers of instant news polls, but 77% of people who answered a CTV poll on their protein intake Wednesday were saying they would not increase their veggie protein intake, despite what the supposed food guide experts have said this week. Over 1,200 people weighed in on that poll. Now, the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's Association, SCA, has, in our opinions, issued a quite restrained response to the new food guide. The SCA liked the fact that lean red meat, such as beef, continues to be acknowledged as a nutrient-rich and healthy protein, but SCA also pointedly notes, and we're quoting, by singling out plant protein ahead of more traditional proteins, Health Canada is missing an opportunity to inform Canadians of the nutritional benefits of eating lean beef. Now, in a major change, Health Canada added the plant-based protein group alongside of beef, eggs, and fish. SCA released said that dietary advice to reduce red meat consumption could put some Canadians at risk of deficiencies such as iron, zinc, vitamin B12. And SCA also replies it would be unfortunate if Canadians interpret this bias as a signal to remove red meat from their diets. The statement continues that a small amount of lean beef can provide high-quality, readily available protein and many other nutrients with relatively low calories. SCA also explains that many essential nutrients are found in beef, including high-quality complete protein, all essential amino acids, readily available iron, zinc, and others. Now, the cattlemen say that via something they call the meat factor, most plant food sources of iron eaten together with meat multiply the benefits of plant protein. The SCA appreciates and says the food guide's focus on food waste reduction, but also counters some claims that beef production is somehow not environmentally friendly. Well, so what to make in the wake of those so-called planetary diet released Wednesday? We'll start here with Joy Smith with Sask Milk, who has a question about science. The food guide preparers claim their version of science, but...
Hello?
A lot of the science that's out there, and we know this science, and it's not studies that are done by us. These are studies that are done all over the world by experts in nutrition and diet. That science is actually pointing to milk having some of the highest quality protein available, and that we should stop steering people away from nutritious whole foods like whole fat dairy and regular red meat. And so we are a little concerned that for those that may choose to or have to follow the food guide, that they might be missing out on some of those healthy animal-based proteins. We're not angry. There's no big drama attached to this. It's just a bit of disappointment that some of the most recent science seems to be sort of being ignored or discounted in this guide.
So you might ask, what would be the effect if institutions followed the new guidelines?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we've seen some studies over this discussion over the last while, some polls and stuff that, you know, maybe the average Canadian doesn't really use the food guide that extensively, but there are a lot of our institutions and groups that do, at hospitals, schools, seniors' homes, things like that. A lot of them are using the food guide as their guide. And in some of those cases, it would just be unfortunate if the people who were eating the diets that are provided aren't going to be giving the options like meats and full-fat dairy and that kind of thing.
So, are the promoters of the planetary guide to protein forgetting what our grandmothers told us about everything in moderation?
Well, I mean, you know, you don't want to point to any food as unhealthy. Everybody, you know, a balanced diet is really the key approach. But really, there are studies and there is the science to show that animal proteins like those from milk and dairy are superior to plant proteins. There's higher protein content, better protein digestibility, and a more balanced content of essential amino acids. And so those, you know, that's the kind of science we shouldn't necessarily ignore.
That again, Joy Milk, she's with Sask Milk. The cattlemen are saying that they have some questions about the food guide issues as well. And they did say that something about that meat factor thing I was talking about. Now, here's SCA President Bill Huber of Lipton.
It's really discouraging and disappointing for livestock producers, not only the beef, but sheep and pork producers, because it's a main staple in our diets, and it has been for many, many years. And you got to realize that chefs and cooks in restaurants and caterers, they follow the food guide.
That again, Bill Huber, who's the president of the Saskatchewan Cattlemen's. Improvements to the food guide, I guess, depends on your point of view. Well, MP John Oliver, who's the parliamentary secretary, I believe, to the health minister, came to Saskatchewan on a mission to explain to we out here in the gap how these regulations are supposed to work. He's in conversation here with our Regina Radio colleague, Jim Smalley.
This is our launch of the Canada Food Guide across Canada, so I'm delighted to be here in Saskatchewan to make Canadians familiar with it. It's a really quite simple but very complete online resource for Canadians to go to learn about healthy eating habits. So it's no longer about food groups and about portion sizes. It's about when to eat, how to eat, where to eat, and how to have healthy eating patterns. So one of the main guidances is that every Canadian should be eating fruit, vegetables, whole grains, and and a protein in protein foods. In the protein foods, there is advice given that people should be eating more plant-based proteins rather than meat-based proteins, which is where I think some of the criticism from the beef farmers is coming from. So nowhere does it say eat less beef. It would suggest that you pick leaner cuts of beef or red meats, and also think about the plant-based proteins as well, and increase your consumption of them, which I think for the Saskatchewan pulse farmers, that's really good news. I mean, there's some recipes in the food guide. There's red lentil and mushroom soup. There's a lentil and vegetable curry, but there's also, there's a beef noodle soup, and there's a moose stew. There's different recipes geared to people's tastes.
But the criticism comes in that there's less emphasis on red meat and less emphasis on dairy products. Is that not true?
Yeah, that is true. I mean, I think the advice for again, on dairy, pick lower-fat yogurts, lower-fat milk. If you're eating cheese, that's great, but pick lower-fat, low-sodium cheeses. Those are really good sources of proteins, plus calcium. Milk's a whole food, but it would be part of your protein diet. And it can be mixed up with other things. The other big change is if you're thirsty, and the other main guidance is if you're thirsty, think about water. There's too much focus on sweetened beverages. A glass of milk for kids is great, as always, but focus on water and don't get kids drinking those sweetened milks or sweetened other products. And because it's a major source of sugar in our diet, which needs to be reduced.
But livestock groups say that red meat and dairy groups say that dairy products have essential nutrients.
Yeah, so diet and eating healthy behaviors, I think the food guide would say, is about a variety of foods and balancing that food out. So as I said, nobody's saying don't eat red meat. Pick lean cuts, but mix it up more with plant protein. So, lentils, any of the pulse groups, lentils, dried beans, chickpeas, those are good, healthy proteins. They give you more fiber in your diet, and they're proven to lower the LDL cholesterols, which is the bad cholesterol. The fattier cuts of beef can have increased saturated fats, which are tied to some health consequences.
Who follows the guide? How important is it?
Well, it's the old guide, which was more of a PDF document, was the second most downloaded document from Canadian Government of Canada's websites after the tax guides. So a lot of people follow it. Schools are interested in it. I think all of us grew up with some variation of the food guide. I was a 60s, 70s guy, so I had the big circle with all the things on it. But the main thing here is we're moving away from food groups, moving away from portions and portion sizes, and just advising Canadians to eat, think about your proportions, and to eat it from those four main groups: vegetables, fruit, whole grains, and proteins.
You aren't saying don't eat meat or don't take dairy, but just kind of be a little more cautious. Do I read that?
I think the food guide suggests that. Think about leaner cuts, lower saturated fat foods, and think more about some of the plant-based proteins that are really good, have good substantive protein qualities as well.
So that again was a conversation with John Oliver. He's an Ontario Member of Parliament and the Parliamentary Secretary to the Minister of Health. Well, I often accused of oversimplifying things, but I stand by what our grandmothers told us, everything in moderation. Well, we have a caller on the line. It's Elaine, I believe. And Elaine, you had a question about the soundbite we had from Sask Dairy. What's the issue you'd like to raise, Elaine?
Well, it's not so much Sask Dairy, but the fact that the guide has eliminated or saying you should use other forms of milk, and they don't contain calcium.
Right. So your question is, do you have a question for Sask Dairy, or?
If Sask Dairy could go ahead and comment on that as well, not just the protein value, but to let people know that the guide is not providing any source of calcium in their what they have been proposing.
All right. Well, listen, Elaine, that is a great insight, and we appreciate you calling in on it. Now, that audio that you heard from the Sask Milk representative was pre-recorded. I don't have her on the line, but I'll certainly put that question to Sask Milk, and on an upcoming program, we'll cover that And hopefully we can answer that question. Certainly I'm not qualified to do that, but thank you very much for the call.
Okay, you're welcome.
Thanks. A great question. We love it when our listeners bring us up to reality. Harry Siemens now again with us. Harry, at Ag Days, on the question of protein, I guess it's a little different take on it, but you've been talking to somebody about protein in soybeans. Can you set that up for us?
Yes, Cassandra Kutchuk. She's a production specialist with the Manitoba Pulse and Soybean Growers Association, and she put out an article about how soybean protein content is much lower in Western Canada than in other parts of the world. And let's roll that interview.
The article you wrote on soybean content, soybean protein, tell me a little bit about that article and about this research and exactly where that's at.
Well, we've been dealing with the issue of lower soybean protein in more northern growing regions. And there's been some interesting research done in the U.S. That's showing us some opportunities to look at our soybean protein content levels. But this is a relatively new issue on farmers' minds. It's been growing over the years, and it's likely that somewhere in the value chain, on the export chain, that there may have been discounts on based on protein levels. But this isn't really something that farmers were always necessarily seeing. They're not thinking, maybe traditionally weren't thinking about protein in their soybeans as much as they were in wheat, for example. There's also no price premiums for growing higher protein soybeans. But protein is obviously an important component, since soybeans that we grow here are mainly crushed for meal, and then oil is the byproduct, and they go to feed markets all over the world. So we're seeing declining protein content levels in soybeans as we move northward in North America. So the highest in South America, and that's moving northward, it gets lower toward Western Canada as well. So north and westward.
Okay.
So Ontario has higher protein. And we have some maps that we've looked at from University of Minnesota that they've put together based on their surveys and their content levels. And we sort of extrapolate from there. We also have our own, I believe, from the Canadian Grain Commission, showing levels of Western Canadian soybean protein versus Eastern. And there is a big difference. So Western Canadian soybeans are producing lower protein. So there's a geographic component there. But then whenever we talk about environment, that would be largely environment. So geography, environment, climate, different growing season lengths. But there's also different genetics. So the genetic by environment by management factors, or G by E by M, is what we largely look at. So when you think about genetics, over time, we've been, or breeders have been selecting for higher yielding, higher yielding soybean varieties, but they may have been sacrificing protein content over time with that, because there is often an inverse relationship between yield and protein, as there is with oil and protein as well. So that might be another factor. So our environment, but then also some genetics. And unfortunately, those are two things you can't do a lot about in the short term. So breeders are very aware of this, and they're working on it. But the solutions are more long term in terms of getting higher protein varieties available to farmers. And then the other question, we're getting a lot of questions on, well, what can I do to increase my protein as a farmer right now? Can I manage my crop to increase those levels? Questions might have been planting earlier. So if I give my soybeans more time to grow, will they have higher protein? Can I fertilize? Nitrogen fertilizer, phosphorus fertilizer, all the different ones. So I looked into some data, because a lot of field trials in Manitoba, they often test for seed quality. We don't always use this data, but it's a good thing that they have, because you can look back into this data. So a project that I did with Dr. Yvonne Lawley, for example, looking at planting dates, we tested protein and oil. And the short story is, planting date really didn't earlier planting didn't really improve protein. But we did see some pretty dramatic differences between locations and years. So locations, years, back to the environment component. And then the fertilization, Dr. Von Lally also looked at nitrogen fertilization in soybeans, also measured seed quality, and did not find differences in protein levels there either. And then Don Flayton, he did a study with a grad student, Gustavo Bardella, and that was looking at a bunch of different sites, looking at different phosphorus fertilization techniques, and they did not see differences in protein. So just dipping into the data that we have currently, I would not say that there's much you can do as a farmer to manage for protein. It's more of these long-term solutions.
So that, again, discussion between our colleague Harry Siemens at Ag Days. And, Harry, what was the young lady's name again? Sorry.
Cassandra Kachuk.
Kachuk, okay.
She works out of the Carmen with the Manitoba Pulse and Soybean Growers Association. And she's been doing some really, really good work, and I was really happy to be able to talk to her here at Ag Days.
Yeah. So so far then, Harry, I don't know if you've heard any outlooks and so forth, just on the question of soybeans, for example. Are people thinking there will be an uptick in soybeans again this year, or what's your sense of it so far?
Absolutely not. I believe that this coming out of this particular time, we didn't have really very good yields. A lot of the drier areas in Manitoba had only 25, 27 bushels an acre, and they can't really pay the bills with that. And the moisture level, as I said earlier, isn't very good. And so right now, and then this particular news coming on the scene, I mean, it just it puts a damper on things, and I it's not what they wanted to do necessarily. They just wanted to raise the, and I think at the end, we didn't quite finish the interview, but at the end, she does say that if farmers need to not just willy-nilly send their soybeans to market, but they need to make sure that they check the soybean content and that they know what they're checking for. And so they had one train, and the company in Manitoba, or Canada, sent a train to BC that got nixed by China. And it was a train full of soybeans. And that's where some of this stuff came in, because they felt it was the protein content was too low. And so, it's going to be interesting how this plays out. I think we're just beginning to see some of the things coming out on it.
Well, that is interesting. A full unit train of soybeans turned around, you think, because of protein?
That's what she was telling me. Because the protein content, and again, as so much of this happens, and I also questioned her on the fact that says we have to be careful that we don't turn this into a perception thing and it becomes a bigger issue. And in which then, of course, would drop the soybean acres automatically. So that's exactly what happened. I don't know how big the unit train was. She didn't tell me. But at the same time, they did turn around the train. And whether it had to do with politics, a bit of this and a bit of that, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But it definitely hurt.
All kinds of trade spin-offs from our quote-unquote discussions with China.
You bet.
Harry, we're going to have to take a break here. When we come back, I'm going to ask you, you and I have talked about a group that was looking into soybean processing in Manitoba, and if you have anything you can add to that, we'll get that. We'll just let our listeners know, and that background talk, by the way, is because Harry Siemens is at Ag Days in Brandon with probably hundreds if not thousands of people going through the venue. It's On the Land from The Rock.
You're listening to All You Ever Wanted to Know. If you have a question for today's guest, call 783-5160 or 1-855-449-5160.
Yes, it's on the land, and we've been having a great discussion here between here and Brandon. Harry Siemens with us on the line with us from Ag Days. Harry, I mentioned I was going to ask you about protein processing in southern Manitoba that's been talked about. Any quick update on that you can bring to us?
Yeah, it's a very short update. It's been very quiet. I had a chance to at least question a little bit some of the people, but right now I think and the other thing is that one of the guys that was pushing it the hardest was Les Rutledge, and he passed away suddenly last April, and since then things have been really quiet on that whole issue. So I'm trying to find out exactly where they're going to move with that.
All right. Now, Harry, just circling back to our opening discussion about plant breeding and royalties and how we pay for future development, you had an observation?
Well, I have more of an observation on the food guide, because I think we have to be really careful that we haven't been manipulated by people that aren't necessarily interested in animal protein, animal agriculture. And so we have to be careful where that whole food guide will take us. And I absolutely agree with the cattle and pork and beef guys that you know what, you don't put us down as much as you're putting us down. So that's all I wanted to say.
Exactly. Great. And we had Elaine call in asking about protein. And just a reminder to our listeners, you can email me at The Rock, and it'll eventually get to me if you have other questions or comments about any of the topics that we cover here on the land. Well, the Prairie Wheat Commissions rely on market analysis from a number of sources, no doubt, and they lean heavily on people like former Foam Lake farm kid Brendan Turner, his market lead insights. Brendan this week was talking about wheat, noting that the grain markets pushed into their third full week of January, with most continuing to watch the U.S. government shutdown and looking for updates on trade negotiations between the U.S. and China, and not to mention Canada being in the middle of it with sort of political goings-on. Now, the issue of wheat marketing discussed that, of course, at Crop Week last week in Saskatoon, a depleted supply of Russian wheat with 12.5% protein has caused price surges in the U.S. up to about $250 per metric tons, U.S. dollars. And now, Canadian wheat exports have increased in volume over the past couple of decades, but globally our percentage of the market is falling. We're down to about 12.5% from 17. Indonesia is the number one market for Canadian wheat right now, followed by China, Japan, Bangladesh, and Nigeria. Market analyst Marlene Borsch says Japan is a market to keep track of.
Japan is always an important buyer to us because they buy quality. They're actually a little bit behind the pace here to date, but I think that will pick up in the new year. In Japan, we also have the benefit that CPTPP will kick in. That will give us progressively an advantage over U.S. shipments into Japan as well. Japan tenders every week, you know, bases a memorandum of understanding between Canada, Australia, the U.S., and that should help us increase that number a little bit.
Marlena Borsch also projects total Canadian wheat exports in 2018-19 crop year will be higher than expected, in the neighborhood of 18.5 million metric tons. In other words, it's going to be a busy couple of months for North American wheat exports.
That's because the market has basically been waiting for Australia to slow down the exports, which will allow more North American wheat to flow into the market once they slow down. I think that's starting to happen in January. You know, general estimates are that Russia will not do more than 1.5 million in January, compared to close to 5 million tons a month at the peak. So I think in the next 6 weeks or so, we might see a bit of an increase yet in price, and then we'll have to start worrying about people looking more at new crop wheat, meaning that in some origins you'll start trading new crop wheat or harvesting it in January. We sometimes forget that new crop wheat comes into the market earlier than what we harvest with our spring wheat.
That again, Marlena Bohr. She's the co-owner of Winnipeg-based Mercantile Consulting. She writes a weekly report available every Monday on the Sask Wheat website. It includes major trades, current wheat prices, upcoming market trends, and even some recommendations if there happens to be a good selling point. Now, that website is www.saskwheat.ca. So, it's been a busy morning, and we appreciate our guests and commentators calling in. Harry Siemens in Brandon, enjoy the rest of Manitoba Ag Days, and we'll be looking forward to more input from Harry as that show goes on. Well, we thank you for joining us on the Land from the Rock. Our busy Scott Fitzsimmons, my producer here today, juggling it all, putting it together for us. Amazing. And so it's Jack Dawes on the Land from the Rock.
Thanks for listening to All You Ever Wanted to Know. If you or your organization would like to appear on the program, call Jordan at 306-786-7625. All You Ever Wanted to Know, only on The Rock 98.5.